Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Matt Fry on LBC.
Okay, so I keep saying this, but, you know, with Trump, it's literally everything everywhere all at once. You've got to look at the foreign affairs. You've got to look at domestic stuff. He's doing all of it. What he's done in the last, what is it, 5-6 months since he's taken over office is what most presidents try and do in the entire 4 years of their term. He is a man in a hurry at the age of 79. And you would have thought that he wanted to spend time on the golf course, but nope, he wants to do all that and do the other stuff too. Although it always amazes me that when he sits at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, there's nothing on the desk. There's nothing there at all, apart from a Sharpie pen with which he signs his presidential declarations. Does he do any homework? Does he read any stuff? Does he do any briefings? I wonder. Let's speak to Simon Marks, the LBC Washington correspondent, who's got up specially early for us and ready to discuss all of it. Simon, good morning.
Morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm very well. I haven't spoken to you for ages. I hope you've had a good summer.
Ridiculous. Yes, fantastic. Thanks. The midges in Scotland were not too bad when I was there.
Oh, good for you. I keep hearing about those midges, and I won't say another word against them. Maybe they're misunderstood, like so many other things in life.
Precisely.
Let's start with Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein. Now, the Democrats say that Congress should hear from Epstein victims, not just Maxwell and the Clintons, and the Republicans in Congress have subpoenaed the Clintons over Maxwell. What's going on here? What's the political game around Epstein?
Well, it's a massive political game taking place here, of course, as Donald Trump continues, A, to insist that there was nothing nefarious or untoward or, heaven forbid, illegal about the nature of his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, and simultaneously tries to deflect attention by doing all the other many things that he's been doing that you were talking about. But the Democrats also find themselves in a considerable jam over Jeffrey Epstein. First of all, because the Biden administration can, I think, legitimately be accused of not having had a tremendous amount of inquisitiveness into getting to the bottom of a story that we now all know had substantially more depth to it than certainly was reported before the American presidential election last year. I think parenthetically one can argue that the failure of America's major media houses to touch the Epstein story might be the greatest failing in American journalism in the modern era. But the Democrats are responding to the pressure that they are under themselves from Epstein victims, who are saying, well, hang on a second, who's speaking for us in all of this? The Trump administration is off essentially carving a deal out with Ghislaine Maxwell, moving her to a minimum security prison in Texas, as has already been done, clearly paving the way for some kind of presidential act of leniency towards her. Provided, of course, that in any evidence that she furnishes to Congress or to the Department of Justice, she doesn't dob Donald Trump in. They'd like her to dob the Clintons in and other prominent Democrats whose names are believed to appear all over the Epstein files. So the Democrats have got a problem here, and they are now, the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee, saying, well, we want to call a hearing for the victims to be given a chance to have their voices heard, because of course victims and their representatives are saying under no circumstances should any leniency be offered to Ghislaine Maxwell. But prominent Democrats, including the former Speaker of the House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi, have argued just within the last fortnight that the Epstein scandal, it's a distraction. It's a distraction from the kitchen table issues, she says, that are impacting Americans. And of course Democrats would say it's a distraction because they are terrified about what those Epstein files are going to say about Bill Clinton, whose relationship with Jeffrey Epstein was extensive. What did Hillary Clinton know? Which is why the Republicans have subpoenaed both of them to come and testify before the committee, they say, in October. So this is almost a game of chicken between these two political parties, and they both find themselves now on a pretty dangerous path.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you would have thought that the Epstein thing would sort of disappear with everything else that's going on, but it means an awful lot to both parties. It's a bipartisan issue when there are so few. And I was so struck, Simon, by the image of MAGA supporters burning their red MAGA hats the other day because they were so appalled when Trump suggested that there wasn't much to see there.
No one would be more delighted if the Epstein story were to disappear than Donald Trump. But the White House now has to understand it cannot possibly disappear because so many of the president's Make America Great Again supporters are conspiracy theorists, people who have long argued that there's a scandal at the heart of the Epstein matter, and now it seems they may be correct, and people who are not going to turn a blind eye to Donald Trump reneging on the pledge that he made last year to open the files up, release them into the public domain. I mean, that pledge was only kind of half a pledge. He almost got ensnared into making it in an interview on the Fox News channel, and immediately, within seconds of agreeing to release them, he started trying to walk that pledge back. But it was a promise, and he's reneged on it, and those Make America Great Again supporters think it's a presidential cover-up. And you don't actually have to be a conspiracy theorist to sense that there is something very bizarre about the Attorney General of the United States saying in February that Epstein's client list was on her desk awaiting her review so it could be released to the public. And then in July, her own Department of Justice saying, Epstein client list doesn't exist. Mm. There's no document to release. There's clearly something up.
Okay. You know, you weave the web and it can certainly ensnare you too.
Exactly.
So who's got more to lose from the Epstein files being disclosed? The Clintons or the Trumps?
I don't know, because I haven't read the Epstein files. I mean, that's the, you know, it depends
in terms
entirely.
Of the political kind of weight, the political base, you know, the political currency.
Well, I mean, clearly Donald Trump has more to risk if there is anything in there that suggests nefarious activity. You know, Michael Wolff, the author, claims that when he interviewed Jeffrey Epstein, Epstein showed him pictures, photographs of Donald Trump with underage minors on his knee, one of whom was topless. Now, I've no idea if that's true, if that photograph exists or not. But if it does, and were it to find its way into the public domain, that could obviously be extremely damaging for Donald Trump. Trump has been all over the map on this story, insisted that at times that the Epstein files were even concocted by Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and their top officials, at which point, of course, Ghislaine Maxwell said, well, if these things are concocted, why am I serving a 20-year prison sentence? Yeah. So he's been all over the map. But the Democrats have got big stakes in this as well, because if it can be shown that Democrats have turned a blind eye to inappropriate and possibly illegal actions by a former president, by some of their most prominent supporters, that's a massive issue for them too.
Okay, let's move on to the economy quickly, because this is, of course, always something that matters enormously. One of the reasons Trump got elected is because inflation was too stubborn and too sticky and too high. American workers and voters very much felt the cost of the economy, even though it recovered slightly better in the US than it did elsewhere in the Western world. The latest jobs numbers were not a disaster, but they weren't great. And as a result of those jobs numbers, Trump fired, you know, the head of the National Labor Statistics Institution, someone no one's ever heard of, and now she's gone. So the classic example of killing the messenger, as it were. Why on earth has he done that? And what's the fallout of this, especially for investors around the world?
Well, because he absolutely is unwilling to accept the picture that was presented to him by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I mean, let's be clear, Erica McInturfer was put in place to head that bureau in the Biden era, but she was put in there with acclamation by the Senate. I think only 8 members of the Senate voted against her appointment. There is no evidence to support the claim that she rigged the numbers. Trump is pointing fingers that routine adjustments that are made to these numbers, because what happens is every month the Bureau of Labour Statistics talks to, I think, 639 separate companies all over the country and gets statistics from them, and that's how they formulate a picture of what's going on in the labour market here. And sometimes some of those companies miss the deadline for reporting, so then the numbers have to be adjusted. Now, the adjustments that Trump's objecting to were substantial adjustments, but there is no evidence to support the view that she was politically motivated at all. This is classic authoritarian hard man stuff, where the guy says, I'm not interested in the numbers you're bringing me. And so he's literally now brought in a set of alternative facts that have been concocted for him by, among others, Stephen Moore, one of the authors of the Project 2025 document, which is absolutely the blueprint for Trump's second term in office. And so there is a denial now about any statistics coming from the BLS that are unwelcome by the White House. And of course, that sends shockwaves through the rest of the government, because it tells every other analyst out there gathering data on inflation, on trade, on output, on everything, that if you show up in Donald Trump's Oval Office with numbers that he doesn't like, your job is going to be on the line. And that undermines global confidence in the American economy. Now, the markets have kind of shrugged all of this off largely. I mean, they're still trying to absorb the fact that the country's engaged in a global trade war that economists say is going to lead to massive price inflation here, and we're already seeing some signs of that. But, you know, there are two competing viewpoints here. The viewpoints of economists, many of them Nobel Prize winning ones, who say you cannot tariff your way to prosperity, and Donald Trump's determination, and he voiced this again this week, he's serious about using tariff revenues and bringing so many of them in that he will eventually be able to scrap federal income tax in the United States. These are two completely conflicting views, and they're like two massive trucks driving towards one another, and we have to see what happens when they actually meet.
Indeed, and it won't be pretty. I mean, it's worth remembering that, of course, America did get most of its income from tariffs at the beginning of the last century and not from taxes.
But of course, America at the time was a much smaller America.
Indeed.
And also an America in which only a certain number of citizens' rights were respected.
Indeed. Finally, Simon, in 50 seconds, if you don't mind, the summit in Alaska on Friday, I hope to be getting there. A long journey to get to Alaska, and I'm really hoping they don't suddenly change their mind on Wednesday night as we land in Anchorage. So what can we expect? How big a deal is this in America? And is this, you know, the next chapter in Trump's quest for the Nobel Peace Prize?
Question about the answer to that last bit. Yes, absolutely, which is why the Prime Minister and other European leaders have been told there's going to be no seat at the table for you in these talks. But I think what you can expect is a carve-up of Ukraine to be decided by Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. And the location almost seems not to be coincidental. I mean, remember, America bought Alaska from Russia in 1867. So this is...
For $7 million. Yeah.
Absolutely. This is a carve-up of territory, and then they're going to impose it on Zelensky. And I think the outcome here, extremely uncertain for all of us, but especially for Ukraine.
Okay. Simon Marks in Washington, thank you very much indeed. And I'll be seeing you very shortly indeed on the other side of the pond.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.